Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome our listening audience to Missing Pages of History. As your host, Lee Robinson, what we're going to try to do is give you information that will be important to your community and its development. We want you to tune in today and help us fill in some of these missing pages as we continue to discuss some of the most recent current events and try to get an understanding in terms of how they may impact on our community and our people. Today we're going to have an open phone line where you can call in at 818-337-0016. That's 818-337-0016. And we'd like to know what's going on in the neck of your woods. We want to talk about current events. And with us today, we have our contributor and analyst, Brother Mikhail and Sister June on the line, who are going to be sharing their perspectives, and we want others to join in. Please feel free to call in. So let's go straight to the juggler in terms of the most recent event that I think has had an impact on the whole world in terms of its history is this whole question around race and racism. And when I say race and racism, we pinpoint that to the so-called Southern Africa, or some called South Africa, others called Tanzania, and the recent death of former president and freedom fighter Nelson Mandela. He made a transition the other day on Thursday, and the world seemed to be giving a international world tribute to his works. And what we would like to do right now in terms of opening up to our audience, and we're going to go to our contributors first, Mr. Page of History, Brother Mikhail, and Sister June. We'd like for them to give their perspective on the life and the work of Nelson Mandela, what it meant to them, and how do they view his legacy. We'll start with Mr. Mikhail. How would you view the legacy and the works of Nelson Mandela and its impact on the community, on our community in the world? Brother Mikhail.
Okay, peace. This is Mikhail, Philadelphia. And that was a great man. Accomplished quite a bit in his lifetime. Looking into his life, he seemed that he was born in 1918, and that's quite a while ago. His activity during the freedom fight in Tanzania or in South Africa was a major struggle, and that long period of incarceration endeared him to quite a few people. We look now as he made transition, and we can begin to review the accomplishments he's done and how we've, here in the West, have assisted that struggle. I'm very impressed with this brother, what he's accomplished. Nothing's perfect, but I think he's done quite a bit.
Joe, can you give me your perspective?
I want to say... Yes, good afternoon to everyone, and this is June calling out of Philadelphia as well. And I want to express my condolences to the passing of Nelson Mandela to his family and to the world. And I also agree that Mr. Mandela did do quite a bit in terms of moving humanity forward and having the Afrikaners and the world recognize that we are human beings and we should act accordingly. When his, as a freedom fighter, having been sent to jail for over 20-some years, to have survived that and come out not an angry man, but to have come out and took his position as president of South Africa was a major feat. And it's interesting when you look at his life, how he said to the world, okay, you've treated us wrong. You've always treated us wrong, but I'm not going to treat you the same way you did me. He came out an unangry man. He rallied his people around him, and he was able to become the president of that country, change the laws that affected all of those people. And even today, some of the things are still present. They still have economic injustice that is happening in South Africa, but not only there. here and around the world. But he made a major stride in showing people we are human beings and we don't have to take this.
Jill, you made an interesting observation about his work is not done, and we're going to discuss that a little further, a little later on. But right now, we'd like to go to another contributor, and it's a missing page. I believe we have Susie on the phone. Susie, are you there? I believe we have some technical difficulty with Susie, so we'll move on. And we'd like to just look at callers that this is an open discussion. We are doing current events. Right now, we are talking about the transition of the freedom fighter and former president of South Africa, Zania, Nelson Mandela. We have a call on the line. We have with us Brother Haki. Give us your take of this recent transition of Nelson Mandela. How do you view him? Or how should he be viewed from your perspective?
Yeah, I think he played a significant part in terms of bringing the end to apartheid. But I think in saying that, I think it had to be very realistic in terms of the overall picture. We can't discount the importance in terms of the armed struggle that took place not only in South Africa but in that whole region of Southern Africa in terms of pressuring the apartheid government to come to a census. Too often we give credit to an individual, but in fact it wasn't an individual that made the history. It was collective that made the history. It's the armed struggle, in addition to people around the world boycotting the apartheid system, which ultimately brought to its collapse. Mandela is very symbolic in terms of putting context to that whole process, but we shouldn't delude ourselves to believing that one individual actually brought about change in South Africa. That's the first thing. I think that in terms of the question, in terms of he's being painted as a pacifist. I don't think Mandela is could be defined as a pacifist. I think one of the things that you have to understand that when he came out of prison, we can't be so naive as to believe that in fact that he harbored no anger. The fact is that he come out of prison after being unjustly put into prison. Didn't come out of prison and see the same conditions that he fought against are still just as prevalent today as they were during the time that he was free. That in just as a term of a human being, that on some level it has an impact on you. And the question is whether or not he was in a position to be able to manage the anger that he felt. I think more appropriately, I think it was simply a question of him being able to manage the anger that he felt, not that he didn't feel it. This notion that he's a pacifist, that he wouldn't engage in the same kind of similar struggle, I think is a misleading one. I think that he would. I think he realizes that the reality is that as Frederick Douglass said, there's no progress without struggle. And so, therefore, I think that to paint him as a pacifist may be a bit misleading. I think that he's willing to be patient. I give him that. But I don't think that he's one who would turn his back on terms of armed struggle, in terms of bringing about change, if he had to do it all over again.
Okay. You know, June made a statement earlier about, after his transition, the works that he stood for is a continuing process and still need to carry on. What I'd like to raise for everyone in terms of this question of the works that he stood for and need to be carried on, how has the realities of the daily lives of your average African brother and sister inside of Zania, South Africa, how has that changed since he has been able to be a former president and been able to live many years after his former presidency? How has the life of an average African person in that country changed? Can people really say there has been fundamentally real changes? Because I'm saying this because it seems like we have seen this page before in history, where great leaders come up, they run for a position, they represent an oppressed particular grouping of people. But what happens is we have individual advancement, but we don't have advancement in the group. And based upon my observation, looking at the economic indicators inside of South Africa and Zania today, they seem to either gotten worse or have not changed. Now, Brother Haki, you just recently came back from South Africa. What are the people living conditions and how do they view Nelson Mandela? You know, there's a view from the outside, but what about the view from the inside? I know you had a chance to speak with some of the political prisoners who are still incarcerated since this time. So can you talk a little bit about that? And I would also like to have the rest of my participant to give me their version on this page of individual advancements for individuals, but has really the realities of the people change for the regions that they represent. But I think you can speak to some of the statements that I've just made as reflect the real reality of Mandela work and the realities of the changes that we often are seeking as a oppressed people.
Well, I think that those conditions that he fought against, that he tried to bring the change to, I think those conditions in terms of the impoverishment of the masses of people, Africans in South Africa, is still pretty much intact. In fact, it is an indication that their poverty is actually accelerating. So, you know, Mandela did all he could do in terms of being a human being, but we have to understand that with the context of the system, nothing has changed. Now, one of the things that people are not privy to, there was a real division between Mandela, Madiba, and brother Robert Sobukwe. Now, Sobukwe's position was that nobody can be truly liberated unless you own the land and you control the economics. Mandela was different. He was willing to embrace, you know, a one concept fits all, which is all and fine in terms of humanity. But in terms of systems, in terms of moving people forward, in terms of really empowering or liberating your people, then the question of land becomes indispensable in terms of bringing about change. Now, one of the conditions of Madiba's release was that he wouldn't even discuss the land question. And today, you got a lot of political prisoners in South Africa who are still upset with the fact that not only was he prohibited from even discussing the land question, but even now, the ANC refuses to discuss the land question. So there's those former political prisoners in South Africa who believe that, in fact, that another struggle has to take place in terms of, you know, really bringing, you know, liberation to South Africa, namely this whole need in terms of, you know, the land question. So I think that when we view the achievements of Mandela, I think one of the things we can say is that he at least brought consciousness or brought a clarity to in terms of, you know, how systems adversely impact on the lives of human beings. And so I think we can give him a lot of credit for that.
Okay, we'd like to look at our listening audience that you are listening to Missing Pages of History. As your host, Lee Robinson, we have our phone line open at 818-337-0016. We are doing basically current events, hot topics. Right now we are talking about the transition of Nelson Mandela. We'd like to encourage you to please call in at 818-337-0016. To Mike, when we talk about this question of how the history of Nelson Mandela is being played out in the West, for example, when I look at the U.S. news for the last couple of days, I see people who was dialectically opposed to his movement, to his struggle, and to the principles and what he was about. Now they are saying he'll break a great man, embrace him. How should we deal with those kind of reactions for the people who historically has been his opposition?
Well, personally, I look at those kinds of statements as not really something that you need to take too seriously. Mandela was considered a terrorist until 2008 by this particular government. That's 2008. That's just a couple of years ago, basically. What we're really looking at is a problem that we face here also. We can vote, but what are we voting for, and how much change does that vote bring in? When Mandela was released from prison, what was the terms for his release? Was it that the ANC would continue in something other than capitalism or other than democracy? Or was his release to ensure that democracy, as they call it, would be the route that would be taken in South Africa? We look at other parts of Africa where land has been returned to the original inhabitants of the area, and that seems to be a problem for the United States and most of the Western countries. Seems to me as that's the ultimate problem. When there are only so many seats at the table, and you let two or three people come in from another group, how much change are you really encouraging, or are you just going to continue to control that change and manage it?
Okay, to June, often when we look at other people's struggles, it's easy to attach and support other people's struggles to far away. For example, we have all embraced Nelson Mandela. I'm talking about the African community here in the United States. And we support him. I'm talking about how he was a great person. But we often have among ourselves in our own community people who are doing the same thing. But these individuals are not being viewed as a freedom fighter, and we don't embrace them. How do we deal with that set of contradictions?
One thing is not to continue to give everything to one man, not to hold them in such esteem that makes them look like they are martyrs or gods. To know that when one person, like Nelson Mandela, is willing to stand up for whatever it is that he believes and fight for it, you communicate to your neighborhood, your communities, and you put the same kind of news up for any individual. So in essence, basically what I'm saying is that the way to get around that is just like you give information about Nelson Mandela, you make sure that when you find freedom fighters in your neighborhood or community, that their names are put out there as well. I mean, it may be a major task, but that's the only way I can see around it.
Yeah, for example, Brother Haki, we support Nelson Mandela as a freedom fighter inside of Azania, South Africa, but we don't support someone like Amunia Mbou-Jamal from Philadelphia. How do you explain that dichotomy, Brother Haki?
I think it's a function of two things. I think it's a function of miseducation or lack of education. I think one of the things a lot of our people just not even privy to that these people exist. Now, Sunni Ada Corley has been in prison for over 45 years. And most people, if you say Sunni Ada Corley, they will know who you're talking about. So it's a function of terms of lack of knowledge. I think the second thing is also the question around, I think it's fear. I think we're on a conscious level, we can acknowledge that, in fact, injustice, oppression, normalization of our people exists in a society. But the question is, what you're going to do about it? In order to do something about it, you got to stand up. I think the government's been very successful in terms of intimidating folks, if you do stand up, there's a hell of a consequence to pay. So I think it's a question about people coming to the realization that they're willing to pay the consequences in order to truly be free. But we haven't got to that point yet. I think it's going to take more atrocities, more marginalization, more suffering before we get to the point. When we get to the point where we realize that we really have nothing to lose, so standing up is just par for the course. So I think it's those two factors have been negated. But I think that, Brother Lee, I think you're right when you talk about the fact that, you know, the organization helps to relieve some of the fear by seeing other people stand up and empowers others to stand up. So we need organizations for people to see, particularly the youth, to see that people are standing up to empower them to stand up. But it's going to be a long process, so it won't be an easy one.
You know, as you know, and I'd like to preface this question to Brother McHale, as you know that when we talk about the legacy of Nelson Mandela, one of the issues that they fought without tooth and without nail is police brutality in terms of how the police would physically brutalize and murder our people, particularly youth. And there seems to be a proliferation of that kind of behavior inside the United States and throughout the world. And we see people inside the United States in terms of political leadership saying they love and embrace Nelson Mandela, but at the same time, they don't respond to the kind of issues that he responded to as relates to police brutality. For example, on October the 28th in New Mexico, in Taos, New Mexico, there was a confrontation between an elderly lady with a family of five. She had a son and three young daughters driving the highway. They were stopped by the policeman, and the policeman entered into a confrontation with this particular family. And, you know, what happened was, based upon what we could see on the video, is that the first time when he stopped the young lady, there was some words given, and the young lady proceeded to want to ask the policeman, why are you stopping? What's going on? And in the midst of talking to the young lady, the policeman opened up the car door and went beat the mother, an elderly young lady. Well, the young son was not going to stand by and let someone just openly mutilate his mother. So he entered into engagement with the police. So that was a physical between the elderly young lady, the young son, and had young daughters and girls in the back of the car. So there's all kind of commotion. This is on the 28th in Taos, Mexico. And what happened was they ended up getting back in the car, locked the door because they feel very threatened. And at the time when that one particular police stopped them, about 3-4 other cops came around them. And they started smashing the doors in with crowbars. So clearly, the elderly lady and her family with these young kids, they drove off. And when they started driving off, one of the policemen took a gun out, and started shooting at the car. And we noticed that this kind of behavior seemed very common now among African people driving on the highway. Now, if you are a person who supports the principles and ideas of Nelson Mandela, how could such a situation be so proliferated in the area of country where you live? How do we deal with these kind of cases of police brutality when it comes to our so-called leadership and politicians, Brother Mike? What do you say to them who claim that they support Nelson Mandela and his ideas?
Well, let's pull back a little bit and we can go to South Africa. Soweto a few years ago? Well, we had the mining incident.
About a year and a half ago.
Right. So now, look at the situation. You have a black political group that's basically running that situation, and the interests of the mining companies are now being challenged by the workers. The workers want a pay increase and better conditions to work in, and that's understandable. We see that with the McDonald's and the fast food industry right now. People are striking or protesting to try and get a living wage. So what happens with these same people who are, I believe, mostly ANC? They side with the mining company because the mining company is the ones with the money and are bringing in that finance to them. And in a sense, the political position becomes something that they need to support or are in charge of supporting the status quo and the mining company. So we see the protesters are shot down, and we see the same thing here. It's happens in a different way, though. The police are protecting certain interests, at least in their perspective, and when they see African-Americans and they're not wealthy African-Americans, they are subject to judge that group immediately. From what I've seen of the video, the woman appeared to be in her 30s, and the police were very aggressive. When they broke into the car and tried to pull the mother out, the teenage boy attempts to protect her, which is natural. What happens is that as they get into the car and are pulling off, these officers there seems to be about 4 or 5 of them, are very hyped up and aggressive, and one actually begins shooting at the car. Now, he's fired, but if you look at that particular situation, you can say, one, that the police misjudged the situation, and because their authority was not being respected in the way that they felt it should have been, they lost control and began to shoot and behave violently. We'll have to tune back into that one to see how it's resolved, but it just speaks to the larger problem of a black and brown worldwide population that's beginning to become unmanageable by a system that was designed to manage those people and turn their labor into profit for the ones who were managing. When Mandela comes out of prison and begins to support this sort of system, it continues the problem and does not fully resolve it. So you get a few more blacks, and you can look at P. Diddy and a lot of the other black celebrities. They may have millions or access to billions of dollars, But the general population, in terms of the African American and Latino communities, continue to suffer as they. So we're not looking at any real changes. What we're looking at is a superficial change, a change in faces. President Obama cannot change the situation, not single-handedly. He's almost an appeasement.
Okay, again, we'd like to alert our listening audience. You are listening to Missing Pages of History. We encourage you to call in at 818-337-0016. If you have any views or comments, make sure you hit number one. And we also like to share you that Missing Pages of History is a biweekly radio program. You can hear our next program. It will be coming up on December the 21st at 12 noon. That'll be December the 21st at 12 noon. If you'd like to have more information on Missing Pages and how you can help us to serve and help us to be in our community, you can feel free by contacting us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com, or you can call us at 804-519-0357. Or if you'd like to support us financially, we welcome all contributions by sending to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. As always, if you miss any of our programs, you can always go to our archive by dialing www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-history-inc. So, again, we welcome you to call in, and we do have a caller. Caller, we'll call your last three numbers, 3330-3330. Your question or comment. Welcome to Missing Pages of History, caller.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment. And it's in reference to you, Brother Lee and Brother Mike, in regards to the current state of affairs. If you've noticed, there's been a push in Congress for legislation to pass that would promote privatization, and you and I can agree, looking at this historically, it's a means of preserving preserving rights to only those that are considered privileged because of their material possession and not looking out for the common good of the everyday person.
Okay. That's a very astute analysis. We'd like to look at this audience that we're going to be going over today, so if you don't hear the entirety of this program, please go to the archive. I would like to come back to your response. Before I come back to your response, I think we have another caller. We have caller 9289. Caller 9289, your question or comment, please. Caller 9289.
As in reference to what Jabari was talking about, I think it's with the United States Postal Service, it brings up just recently where Amazon, I believe it's Amazon, going to use the drones to deliver mail, which also is, if they allow them to do that, then we're taking away our privacy rights, because I think the drones will be used not necessarily as a way of saying a faster way of receiving your goods, but it's going to be as a mechanism where they can be able to monitor basically what people do. We do have some political agencies here trying to fight it before they are actually really given the permission to be able to use these drones.
Yeah, I think our callers are alluding to the whole concept, and I think it's an important concept that our communities need to seriously look at and discuss and get a proper understanding of its impact on us historically as well as in the present future. And that is the concept of privatization. Right there, we can see the inner cities in the U.S. and throughout the world are going bankrupt, and they allow individuals to run cities as like it's their own corporation or their own piece of property. So this question of privatization is a very crucial one for anyone who wants to become or act as a spokesperson or as a leader for people who have been dispossessed particularly. So, Brother Hackey, Sister June, can y'all give us some kind of take on this whole issue of privatization and how it's impacting not only your community but even your personal lives? Can you give us some feedback in terms of this question of privatization and its impact on the community? Brother Hackey first, then Sister June.
Yeah, well, I think the reprivatization is simply a readjustment of the resources. I think one of the things we have to understand in the context of the global society is that the access to money is actually decreasing for the overwhelming numbers of people on the planet, but it's increasing for a very, very small number of people. So in the process of empowering a small group of people to have access to such overwhelming amounts of money, you exponentially increase their ability to control large and larger number of people who become increasingly poor. So we got to be particularly concerned about the particular African people. And we look around the country where we see these, we see locales, you know, actually creating their own governments, and went to the exclusion of the rest of the masses of the people. Then it doesn't bode well in terms of the future for people, particularly working people, African people in society. So privatization is simply a manifestation of the crumbling or the dismantling of the global empire. So you got to understand, these people are going to go down fighting. So we have to understand that we have to prepare. This is a war. Whether we want to look at it as such or not, it is a war, and we have to prepare ourselves.
Joe, give me your take on this whole impact of this whole question of privatization, and maybe how it's affecting your community.
Basically, when I think of privatization, like Brother Haki said, it's a global phenomenon, and where the means are going to be taken over by those who have the resources to do so. And I think about even here in this country, in America, where you have the Chinese, you have the Europeans who are coming over, who are actually taking over the building and the maintenance of our resources, like the bridges and certain buildings. Again, it's their way of saying we want to continue what we have obtained, and we're going to carry it as far as possible. We're willing to, if you allow us, if America allows them, come into your country, control as much resources there, and to help build, you know, their pockets. And like was said before, that leaves the little man or those who don't have those means with nothing.
Yeah, I'd like to throw my two cents in there, too. I think we can just sum all that up with one word, greed. And if we look back through history, even just in the last few hundred years of European expansionism, the entire system that we have here in the United States has been designed to maintain a lot of that. If you just look at the public school system, when you go to a public school in a wealthy neighborhood, you are given almost a college education by the time you're getting out of high school. Inner city neighborhoods, you're not getting much of an education, and that was already part of the design. When we talked about the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, that was basically for factory workers, sharecroppers, poor people to be able to at least to calculate a paycheck and read a contract. The education to rule has always been reserved for those with money. And when you get to the Ivy League of colleges, those are the colleges which are going to prepare people to run Wall Street and government and so on and so forth. So what we see now, I would categorize that or characterize that as an adjustment. We've come to a time where the racial division is not serving the purpose as much as it used to. So now you have a few entertainers or a few persons of repute of African-American background who are given access to these riches, and we get to see that. But the reality is that nothing's really changed. And it's very important for the people who control things to continue the system, because they're not in this game to lose. They're not trying to watch their resources and accomplishment or their power to be drained away to groups of people who they have no control over.
Okay, we got a few minutes left. There's one other current event I'd like everyone to weigh in on and tell me their views and perspectives. And this current event really deals with sports. And recently there was a decision made not to prosecute the starting quarterback of the Florida State University for accused or alleged weight charge. Based upon what you have seen and what you know, start with Susie. Give me your perspective as a female, Susie. What is your impression or your take on that particular decision? and the whole incident?
Okay. On that particular decision, it's just, being a female myself, it's just strange to me that originally he wasn't charged. And the fact that he wasn't originally charged, I don't think that this particular young lady really felt that she was raped. Because if she really was, then she had really been, even if the police jurisdiction didn't do what they wanted, then she'd have found other avenues to let people know that this actually had happened to her. I believe it was all just a fabrication from the beginning from her because of the fact that she didn't really raise her voice if she was truly raped. And I'm glad that, you know, this brother won't have to go through the judicial system for something that he didn't do.
Okay, Haki, what is your take on that?
I think the whole case is suspect. Over a year of investigation, no charges. And so I suspect that this is correct. I think that it was a situation where there was no real legitimate charge in terms to be had. And I think that what happened was those in power simply used the opportunity to discredit a young brother who had the opportunity to go to school to make tons and tons of money. And this is the problem black athletes face in terms of, you know, the universities, that the moment you make a mistake, then those in power realize your earning potential, and there's the desire in terms of to undermine that potential. So we had to be very careful. Athletes had to be very, very careful about, you know, their behavior when they're in the universities.
And Mike, what is your...
Yeah, this is Mikhail. I have a question. I don't know much about this particular case, though I have seen recently cases where the college kids are drinking heavily and the girls are passed out and things happen, pictures are taken, placed on the internet. So does anybody have any particulars on this case, the one that we're talking about? Exactly the circumstance?
I think one of the things that came from my observation and my understanding of the case that we're interested in was the fact that you had three people in the bedroom at the same time. Two males and one female. And one of the males was being the female boyfriend. I'm finding it so interesting no one never had really approached him and talked to him or where it took place. Now, that was sort of raised a sort of flag for me in terms of something is going on for you to have your girlfriend in the room with another man. Now, one of the things with dropping the charges was based upon the fact that they said that she did drink a little bit of alcohol, but one of the things was that she had lapses in her memory. Some things she couldn't remember, so therefore the prosecutor didn't feel comfortable of breaking on any kind of charges. But at the same time, I think another dynamic you need to look at in terms of this case is the timing of it. This thing was a year ago, and then all of a sudden decided to bring this forward. It does make a suspect in terms of if they were trying to undermine this young brother from being able to receive all the benefits they can based upon his hard work. At the same time, I don't want to say that those kind of things can't and don't happen, because I have been on universities and I know sometimes they do. So I know also at the same time y'all are dealing with a very powerful university. So looking at all those kind of factors, I mean, you know, it's a dynamic that happened yesterday, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see this one again, play out again later on, some other time.
Right, because I'm remembering a few years ago there was a case with some white students and a black stripper, and there was supposedly a rape charge, and then those were dropped. I would imagine that in terms of somebody who can make a university a lot of money, they would have some support from that university. Now, as to the young lady and the boyfriend and the lapses in memory and the alcohol, it seems been quite. I've seen quite a few of those cases, and I could even imagine that the prosecution may have not felt that they had a strong enough case, and things could have been worked out behind the scenes. But that's all speculation. So I really would withhold my judgment on that particular.
And do we have an opinion from June as a female? I'd be interested. What is her understanding or her perception of that case?
Okay, I'm not familiar with the particular case, but based on what I heard, it sounds like the red flag should have gone up. She waits a year before she, you know, is brought to trial. So, in that regard, that's enough for me to say. I'm willing to say that I cannot believe that they were even bringing a trial because of that alone.
Well, we got to remember, in terms of the facts, is it's the DA decided to pursue it, not the young lady. I think one of the questions becomes, why are they waiting so long? And so this has been an interesting case, looking at how this thing has played out. But in closing, I'd like each one of our participants today to make a closing remark again, since the bulk of the show will dealt with the transition of Nelson Mandela, a one-minute statement on what they would like for our community to remember the most about Nelson Mandela. Starting with, do we have Susie?
Okay, I just hope with the transition of Nelson Mandela that hopefully some of the youth will get together and try to carry on further what his real objective was. You know, and just like Heike spoke about the land question, maybe this will open some of the youth minds and open them up enough to say, let's go and do what he couldn't do when he was let out of prison.
32nd June.
In terms of his transition, I hope that the people around the world will know that he was a humanitarian, and that he wasn't, in terms of that anger issue, not that he had to be a pacifist, but that he rethought his actions, whether it was agreed upon before he got out of jail or not. But the thing that I would like to see now, if indeed his ex-wife, Minnie Mandela, have in esteem, I said, go for it, sister.
30 seconds.
Yeah, with all this that we've spoken of today, I hope that this will encourage us to look a little deeper into the history of Brother Mandela, what his accomplishments were, and the circumstances that allowed him to be released from prison. We need to look at what the mission was before and compare that to what the mission was after. And in terms of anything that we see in terms of TV and the media, don't accept it at face value. Do a little research. Double-check everything. Check your facts. And you may be surprised that what you're seeing on TV is not what's real.
30 seconds, Haki.
Three words to the youth. Study African history. Thank you.
That was very succinct, and we'd like to thank our listening audience for listening to Missing Pages of History. As we said, we are a bi-weekly show. We'll be on the 14th of December at 12 noon. We also like to remind everyone who would like to support Missing Pages of History that we have an upcoming raffle drawing, which will be January 16th. If you'd like to purchase any tickets, you can always email us at MissingPagesofHistory1@yahoo.com or give us a call at 804-519-0357. Before we go on, we'd like to give a shout-out to some of our supporting shows that we have a working relationship with, and we'd like to encourage our audience to listen to these shows, because what these shows are doing also is they are making their contribution and filling in some of these missing pages of history as it relates to our people in the underserved community. There's a show coming every Saturday morning called Bread and Coffee. Comes on from 9 to 10 o'clock Eastern Time with Sister Fran Jones. You can always call in at 213-769-0900. That's Bread and Coffee. That's every Saturday morning. We'd like to encourage you to watch the show by calling in at the number is 213-769-0900. And Saturday nights from 10:30 to 12:30 is a show called The New Resurrection. New Day Resurrection by Sister Empress Shai. You can Google her show. It's a blog talk show, and it's an excellent program. We like to share with folks who support the program. So support our programs and try to do something to uplift humanity. Until next time, let's continue to fill in our missing pages of history. We thank you.